Hi, and welcome to the Just Riding Along Show.
Testing, testing.
Testing, testing. Hello, and welcome to My Balls. Hello, and welcome to episode 199. Tonight's show is brought to you by Ride the Lightning. Also, Travis Pastrana is not our special guest tonight, so...
Do we have a special guest tonight?
No, but 199 is his number.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought I was a special guest since I didn't participate last week.
No, you're just on the shit list.
I'm just special in a different way.
Let me just pat you on the noggin. Yeah, so bike news. Let's see. I didn't ride any bikes, which is a running theme for me recently. I'm going to ride a bike before we record next. I will. A regular bike. Maybe an e-bike, maybe a dirt bike. Maybe I'll just ride all the two-wheeled things.
You should do that, like one each day that you're off.
But that wouldn't get me. Ooh, it would get me to by the time we record, because I have tomorrow. Got to get busy. Yep. I did go surfing, which...
River surfing.
I went river surfing, and I met... It's so funny that there's people you kind of know from the bike shop, and then they're down there, so I would say you like meet them again, right? And this lady was being really nice, Miss Ellen, and she was like, so yada yada. And I'm like, no, this is my second time ever being down here. And the first time I didn't have a wetsuit, so I got really cold. So this is only like the fifth time I've ever tried dropping, like getting on the board and like getting in the wave. And she's like, it'll probably take you about 50 times before you really get the hang of it. And she's 100% right, because by the time I had tried it like 9 times, I was able to stand up with no support. No one helped hold the board. I didn't hold anyone. And I like kind of started figuring it out. And I was like, ooh, I'm going to turn a little bit and go out to the middle of the wave. And then I got to the middle of the wave and I was like, uh-oh, your nose is too high. And then I was like, uh-oh, your nose is underwater. And then I was like, uh-oh, all of you is underwater.
That's when he knew.
No, it's fine. Ryan that I work with is amazing. He's given me the best advice, which is when you fall, you just put your hands, like touch your fingers together over the top of your little surf helmet. And that way your elbows are sticking out front and you don't get hit in the face with a surfboard when your PFD pops you up. And
that's solid. That sounds like experience talking.
He's seen other people get stitches and stuff.
Yeah.
So, and then, let's see, I went and picked up my suppressor. Going backwards in time, I sold my Land Rover on Monday. And then today, I bought a Jeep Wrangler. Just going wild. I'm like that kid.
Does the Jeep Wrangler solve the problem you were having?
It does. Don't ask questions.
Well,
Replacing a Rover.
From what I Kenny, look, I said the same thing, and as far as I gather, and it makes sense, when you mess something up on a Jeep Wrangler, it's much easier and much less expensive to unfuck it.
Yeah, that's reasonable. Mm-hmm. But, I like the logic and the progression here. Get rid of a Rover to get a Chrysler product.
Or move out of... an import and into one of the most widely supported off-road vehicle platforms on the market.
No, it is definitely very supported, without a doubt.
Hold on, I got to go beat the dog. I'm not really
as Tom would say.
That's a Tom Purvis saying. I'm not actually going to beat my dog. I'm just going to like throw a blanket over him like a fucking parrot.
Jesus Christ.
So yeah, little quick googling here while Andrea has her interlude.
Is Jeep Wrangler the most reliable vehicle on the planet? Yes.
It is not. Yeah, I can buy a used steering box that's been remanufactured for my Land Rover for $515 from eBay, which is pretty sketchy. Or I can buy really funky looking ones for $285. And my truck needed one. Or I can buy a brand new one for like $225 for a Jeep Wrangler, which it also needs, because that's what happens with 30-year-old vehicles that have been driven off-road. They need a steering box. That's just how it'd be.
That hasn't been driven off. We were looking at the tires.
He's taking it to Moab.
Oh, okay.
And he's taking it over a ton of the passes in Colorado. He's just a very tame old dude.
Okay.
He was like, I'm probably going to cry when this drives away. And I was like, well... don't feel bad. I'll probably roll it over in the next 5 years. So, and I got to meet two Great Danes that were large enough that Daisy could have ridden them like a mighty steed. So yeah, that's me. That's what I've been doing. I'm gonna ride something with a internal.
You're gonna ride all the two wheeled.
I'm gonna ride
things.
Something with an internal combustion motor, something with an electronic assist, and something that is only human powered, and do some more water sliding before we record next.
That's ambitious.
It's ambitious. And if I don't do that, all of y'all that are paying for this free content can have your free back.
Well, I mean, we have some patrons.
No, the people that aren't paying can have their money back.
Okay.
That was my legalese there. So,
all right.
Yeah. Someone else start talking so I quit rambling.
Kenny?
Let's see. What did I do last week? No bicycling. I did pedal my bike around the neighborhood. But that was just to see a car crash that was on the corner.
I thought you were going to say chase an ice cream truck.
No, it was very dusty. There were cobwebs on my brake caliper. And there's like,
Jesus Christ.
And there's like not even, my house is extremely clean. And like my garage is very clean. So it's.
Well, yeah, little spider friends find their way.
Well, I'm just saying that's how long it's been since I've ridden that. So yeah, I pulled the little cobweb off and. Turned it on and everything worked. Rode it around the block, did some wheelies, and then put it back. Other than that, what did I do?
Oh, wait. Can I interject with a full face story?
Sure.
So today in Colorado Springs, I saw a guy on an electric longboard with his dog, and he was straight up wearing like a crotch rocket style motorcycle helmet, like a track
helmet. I would if I was riding on the road with a dog that could just like yank me like or yoink me off of that. Longboard at any time and scrub my face on the ground like that. That's
or was he
smart,
carrying
right?
The dog?
No, the dog was walking, but he was also wearing like a t-shirt, shorts, and flip-flops. And I'm like, okay, so.
Well, yeah, I mean, you get some road rash, but at least your face and your head are okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yep. Importance.
Everything else is just aesthetic.
Yeah. Importance is helmet, boots, gloves, and then everything else. That's the order. But yeah, I took the Husky out. Did some exploring off Highway 6. I rode around Strawberry Reservoir, which I've never done before. Place is pretty cool. They're building a bunch of crap out there. But it's a neat little like pocket town. Just a neat little area. So if people are bored, you can look up Strawberry Reservoir off Highway 6 in Utah. And yeah, it was fun. Had a good time. Motorcycle was good. I am pretty much at the...
Matt just Googled codpiece, and I don't know why.
Kenny was talking about what was important, and I was like, well, a codpiece would be pretty important, but all I could think of is chastity armor, and I knew that wasn't it. And I just had to, like, I had to sit and think too long to get my zinger in. So.
Well, I was not riding with a chastity belt.
No, a codpiece. That's like the dick armor on like a knight's armor.
Yeah, but the back tire is pretty much completely gone on the Husky, so I do have some new tires that I need to put on. I might get one more ride out of them. I don't know, but they're pretty gone. Surprisingly enough, still works pretty good with a bald rear tire. It's kind of not a problem. It's kind of nuts how much, unless you're in loam or in mud, it's amazing how much just straight rubber compound is basically all that matters, and it can be a slick. It's just nuts.
Yeah. You just have more rubber touching.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. What else is going on in my world? I think that's pretty much it. I'm wondering if I should... Again, I don't ride my bike, and I shouldn't spend any money. I've been really good about not spending money for a long time. It's kind of nice. But I kind of wonder if I should pick up... What's the new Fox 4 called? The Podium?
Mm-hmm.
What if I should chuck one of those on the Kinevo? We'll see.
Or the Ultra B.
Absolutely not. No, I'm done with bicycle forks on motorcycles. Luckily, I don't own any of those anymore.
All right.
Yep. That's it. I think that's all I got.
All right. I'll go. So let's see. In the last week, I have had a little interesting off-road driving experience. I wanted to go elk scouting up in the mountains, and I rode up this road. Normally, if I don't know a 4x4 road, I will try to like ride my bike on it first, or just be like somewhat familiar with it to know if I want to actually drive my 4Runner on it. And just to preface this, like my 4Runner it's light, very lightly built, very utilitarian built. It's got one size larger than stock tires. It's got the Bilstein front leveling kit. It's not even really a lift. It just, the truck comes stock with the front end a little lower than the rear, and it just lifts the front end to match the rear. So it's like, I don't know, an inch or two. And got a half bumper with a winch and rock sliders. And that's pretty much it. It's just there so I can like go kind of wherever I want to go within my own limits, and the truck can handle more than what my limits are. But I read some like trip reports from various people on the internet about this road. It sounded pretty tame, so I felt pretty comfortable doing it. And it was just kind of obnoxiously bumpy, and you just kind of had to go slow. And there were a couple spots where like there was kind of a big loose rock, and it's like, yeah, I should go around that so I don't, you know, rub the underside of my truck with it. And yeah, it was pretty good. But then I got to this spot, and it was just before the spot where I wanted to park, and a giant slab rock had fallen into the road and blocked basically the, like, I was headed uphill, and if you can imagine a steep slope with this bench cut road on it, and it was blocking the right tire tracks of the bench cut road. And it had been there for a hot minute because they had built some, basically, I'm guessing the rocks that fell down with the big one, like they took the smaller rocks that they could actually move and put just, I don't know, an extra tire width on the downhill side of the road, the driver's side. But my truck was a little long to really use that for the whole trip around the slab of rock that had fallen. So I looked at it and it's like, yeah, I got to roll up on this slab. And I don't know, it's like 12 inches to, you know, like on the low side, like 12 inches. And
it's like 19 feet tall.
No. And on the high side, it was probably 24 inches. Like, it's not a huge deal.
It was the size of one of the Twin Towers.
I mean, yeah, in the state they're in now.
Jesus Christ.
Matt hasn't learned to not provoke my dark humor. But I don't like exposure. And it's not that this, like, I couldn't look down and see, you know, a cliff 100 feet below, like that kind of drop off. But it was really, like, the hillside was really steep. And you could most definitely lose a tire or both tires off of the side of the road, because other than where they had piled these rocks up, it was real soft on the shoulder. And there wasn't really a shoulder. It was just soft dirt with a few little aspen trees growing out of it. Like, you could get in a bad spot and like need someone to come and help you get out. And probably wreck the shit out of your truck too, just like running the body panels into trees and whatnot. So, you know, I didn't want to do that. And on the way up, I'm all by myself. There's no one else there. And I'm like, okay, well, I look at it and I'm like, I got to roll my passenger tires at least to this spot on the rock. And I start just creeping up on it, and that goes okay. And then as the rear tires are starting to climb, it kind of starts, like, the rear tires kind of start to slide downhill. Or the rear tire kind of starts to slide downhill. And it was just a mistake because I'm not an experienced off-road driver. I turned my front wheels to the right, which is not really what you want to do in that situation. So it just made it like really rough. And I gassed it a little bit because it's like, I got to like find the traction and get up this and get off of it before, you know, the back end like goes down the hill. And I made it over, but it was like real rough and it made some expensive noises. And I went 100 yards up the road and parked where I was planning on parking and looked, and, you know, there's no obvious damage or anything and no sauce is leaking out of anywhere. So I made it out of that okay. Went on my hike, went scouting, found some cool spots, came back, and I was like, you know, it's not that far from like where I'm parked to the rock. I'm going to go and just like stack some rocks on the backside of it because it actually is a little bit more of a lip. It's a little taller on the backside than it was on the front side. And even though I had gravity working for me at that point, and I wouldn't really have to use as much like oomph to get up and over it, and I wouldn't lose traction quite as easily, like, I just wanted that extra little bit of mental comfort. So I went to stack some rocks up, and I did that, and I made a nice little rock pile to roll up on, and it's pretty steady. And as I'm walking back to my truck, this guy in a Jeep is coming down. I'm like, hey, it's like, there's a rock right up here. Do you mind just like, once you get over it, just stop and like spot me. I just need to know like that my passenger side tires are like on the road as I'm rolling over it. Like, yeah, he's like, well, there's, you know, I'm with a group, and I don't know why Taco's parking so much, but he's like, I'm with a group, and, you know, I'll get on the radio and the last person in line will help you out. And that's what they did. And it went fine. My rock slider on my driver's side definitely touched the slab rock somewhere, and I had a tire off the ground at some point, but made it over a lot smoother on the way down, and the rock slider is the only thing that took a hit, which is what it's there for. So it's got a nice little smiley face on it now. Yeah, like the gouge in it looks, it's a big smile. So that was the most exciting thing that happened to me this week, I think. Garden's doing good. Meat birds are doing great. And I think that's it. Oh, I found a creek in a customer's bike that I feel good about. Well, there is this older
gentleman. No, I'm just laughing because you're about to clown all over me.
I'm not going to clown on you. Like, there are a few things. Like, I'm a decent mechanic.
This customer's bike came in, and it was dead silent. And then when it left, there was a creak.
No, it was the opposite. There are things that I'm better at than most people. And finding noises in bikes is one of those things. Like, I can hear a noise, and I can kind of imagine the component, material, and part of the bike that is making that noise. Like, it just has a certain sound, and especially if I can feel it in the bike, that's even better. Like, if I can hear and feel the noise, like the vibration of it, I can almost 100% of the time find out what's making it. And this older man comes in, and he's got, what was it, a Specialized e-road bike?
Creo.
Okay. E-road bike. And it's got this, like, kind of thump noise that he says, and Matt takes it out and rides it, and he comes in, and he's like, you know, I'm going to just swap these pedals out. And he does that. It didn't make a difference, and he is telling the guy, like, look, you know, we're really busy, and we're backed up, and, you know, he's like, we're really busy. If you can just, we'll set up a reservation time, you can bring it so that, you know, we can work on it same day, but sometime next week, we'll get you sorted out. You'll just have to bring it back. And I was like, well, hold on, let me go ride it. And I rode it, I heard the noise, felt the noise in my feet, and I was like, man, it seems like maybe chainring bolts, and brought it back in, put it in the stand. And I was like, I want to check the chainring bolts. And as I like grabbed the chainring to kind of brace it to, you know, just see if the bolts are tight, the chainring wiggles a little bit. And so we ended up taking that crank arm off, and there's a little pinch bolt that holds that chainring to the motor. And apparently that just wasn't tight enough, and the chainring was just loose on that section of the motor, and it would just wiggle a little bit and make this kind of thumping noise. And so we tightened it up, torqued it to spec, and it was quiet. He was real happy. So that's my finding. I realize that's not as exciting now that I've told the story, but it was very exciting to me at the time. And everyone was, even though the guy was really nice, he was just one of those like old guys who just wants to talk to you about just lots of stuff, and you're busy, and you're like, man, I can't talk, man. I got to work. And so everyone was real happy that he was out of there and wasn't going to have to come back in and discuss his bike for hours at a time again.
Yep.
But that's been my week. My God, Taco.
Let's start by talking about power meters.
All right. New shit.
So new shit. Expedo is claiming that they're going to bring out power meter pedals, and you should stop listening to them right now because they are $900 for power meter pedals. Or you could buy like an XO power meter crank for $400 and a pair of XTR pedals for $200 and have a bunch of chicken nuggets and a power meter that actually works.
Did they say whether or not those are torque sensitive? Because I remember when the Garmin ones came out.
No, all that's behind us now. Okay.
Like the first generation Garmin pedals, if you didn't put them on with a torque wrench, they were just wrong.
No, the current Garmin pedals are actually halfway decent, as are the Wahoo pedals, the Speed Plays. Those are, we sell a lot of those, and they're fairly problem free.
I mean, I can see if you have a bunch of bikes and you need to swap your power meter from bike to bike, like that makes a little more sense than a crank, but yeah.
Some people have weird cranks and stuff too on top of that, which is also dumb, right? You should just have a SRAM crank, and then you won't have any problems.
And speaking of power meter companies that have had problems, both as a company and with their products, Stages Cycling is back.
Well, I thought they were gone. Like, they just closed their doors.
Well, Kenny, Giant walked into the building. Someone from Giant walked in and said, I am the captain now, and bought them.
Mm. But I thought they closed them as they were. Like, I thought Stages as it was gone, and that they were just going to use their intellectual property essentially in some future Giant thing. I didn't realize they were still like cranking out Stages products.
Well, they weren't, and now they are.
I didn't know that.
Yep. And then in other brands that are in trouble, Alchemy Bikes is for sale on Bike Rumor. Like, it's pretty bad when you're for sale on Bike Rumor. Like, when no one wants you so bad that you're just like, hey, if you're interested, hit me up, ryan@alchemybikes.com. Yeah. Jeremy Benson from Bike Radar or Bike Rumor says, this is a rare opportunity to purchase an established bike brand. So if you're interested, I wouldn't sleep on it.
Yeah. Okay. Is it really that rare of an opportunity? And is it smart? And the answer to both of those are no. If you're wondering if at any given time you could buy a random bike brand, yes, you could buy a bike brand anytime you want. Because there's a lot of people that do not want to have a bike brand anymore. I mean, we don't need to, but we could make a list in the past year of all the bike brands that have gone for sale and or bankrupt. So saying that that's rare is pretty stupid.
So in things that aren't going out, maybe they are. Envy released new carbon wheels.
Yeah, the road wheels.
They have silver hubs and spokes, so that's all I care about. Like
that is neat.
I just want them for that. Oh, they only retail for $37.50. I'm going to get two pairs.
Yeah, that's not so bad.
No, not bad at all. I think, do you know if they make QR in caps? Because if so, I could put a set on the Crave.
I thought the Crave was for sale.
Well, now with these wheels, it'll be the fastest flat bar gravel bike in Salida that is based on a 2015 aluminum XC bike with an eccentric bottom bracket. See, that's like drag racing shit. You just keep putting qualifiers on it until you're like the Corvette dude that's like, I'm the only yellow Corvette that had the trim pieces installed by a left-handed line technician.
My Supra is the fastest on the dyno.
Dude.
Now, normal nip as well, but I think the road stuff is going to stay for a while as internal nip. And arguably, I guess you don't have to true those as often, typically. But it's just
more aerodynamic that way.
It's just frustrating when you do have to mess with them.
Because it's like, cool, this minor wheel true is going to be $100.
But it's just hard. I mean, they're fine wheels. It's a great wheel. I know there's tech in them, and they're pretty damn light. But $37.50 with in-house hubs? I'm sorry.
I mean, how much is the fanciest zip wheel?
$37.50. With in-house hubs and metal spokes. It's not like these are carbon or something else crazy. It's, that's a tough one.
I mean, Zip 454s are $44.50 for a set with house brand hubs.
Yeah, let me be clear. I did not say you should buy those or that's okay either, because it's not. But I guess this is one of those things, these Halo products, they can basically... In my opinion, they shouldn't make these $37.50. They should make them $4,500 because the same number of people are going to buy them. So you might as well make more money. It's just
all right.
Yeah, it's just crazy. The bike industry is in an interesting place. I don't really know what to say. I mean, there's always going to be crazy expensive stuff. And it's probably smart, honestly, to have just Halo products because you don't have to sell very many of them. And it gives you this crazy notoriety, even if your stuff is garbage. It's just, and again, let's be clear, I'm not saying the Envy stuff is garbage, and it's cool that it's made in the USA sometimes, whenever they feel like it being made in the USA, but I don't know what to say. It's so expensive for that. It's just bananas. And I guess bikes are getting there's been a resurgence of going back to normal bikes where people are hitting price points and they're realizing you can do great stuff with aluminum, and I think we're going to see a resurgence of that. We've talked about it a bunch on the show, but wow. Yeah, we can move on. $37.50. It's a lot of dollars.
Do we want to start working our way towards mountain bikes with Canyon's new gravel bike, New Grizzle?
Sure.
It's almost a mountain bike. It clears 2.1 tires.
I'm curious.
You know, I liked this.
Go ahead.
I was scrolling through the article about this, and I really liked it until I saw the build spec. Well, I was thinking Tour Divide, right? Because there are a lot of people who are starting to ride the bigger tire clearance drop bar bikes on Tour Divide. But if for something long like that, you need, even if it's a small one, like a gravel suspension fork, having suspension when you're going to be riding for 15 to 30 days is pretty fucking important.
12 to 30 days now?
Okay, 12 to 30 days, whatever. And I really loved everything about it until I saw that one of the cooler features of it. So it has a funky handlebar. And I'm okay with the funky handlebar. I think it's cool. They make a bolt-in bag that can go in the... It's got like a loop in the front of it. It's nice and flat on top. Even has like some, a little bit of rubber integrated into it. Really cool. It has, for the rigid models, you can get an internally routed lighting system, which is, look, I didn't do Tour Divide, but I did all of the training and preparation for Tour Divide, which means I had to know exactly how I was going to set my bike up. All the bags, all the lights, all of the shit, because you got to like shake that shit out ahead of time, right? Like you can't just do all the training and then be like, all right, time to strap these lights and bags on my bike and get going to Canada. Like you can't do that if you want to be prepared, right? So I know what a pain, awful pain in the ass it is to get all of that stuff sorted. And the fact that you've got all the mounts for bolt or all the mounts for racks, you've got an internal lighting system. Like they actually sell one of the builds with a Sun Dynamo hub, which is one of the better, you know, more renowned dynamo hubs. It's not just some like thing that they ordered up, you know, from some random company from wherever they get their bikes and components built. You know, it's a really nice dynamo hub with integrated wires. The wires are even, so like with a regular dynamo hub, you have like a wire hanging down on your fork and you have to plug it into the hub, and unplugging and plugging that back in can be a gigantic pain in the ass, and you can fuck stuff up when you do it. Like you have to be really careful as a mechanic on a divide bike or any bike with a dynamo hub. Like you got to be sure that you don't fuck the wires up or bend one of the contact points, you know, stuff like that. This is all integrated. Like you put the dynamo hub and wheel, like you put that in your fork and it's making contact with an integrated contact point, which is cool. And the lights are integrated and the wires are all internal, which again, like that's just stuff that you, it just eliminates some of those variables that you have to deal with when you set a bike up for something like any long bikepacking trip. But then I saw that that whole internal light system, like you can't, you don't get it on the build that has the suspension fork, which I understand because they put the contact points like in the dropouts of the fork. And yeah, I mean, I can see why they wouldn't do it with a little gravel suspension fork from DT Swiss, but that was disappointing. But other than that, I think this is a really cool option for someone who wants to do some long stuff and just bikepacking trips in general and adventure riding, all that kind of shit. Like, I think it's legit. You guys got anything else to say about it?
Not really.
How relevant do you think Canyon is these days? They obviously come out with some decent bikes, and there's some people that like them. But, you know, I've seen lots of issues with getting parts and service and all that stuff. It's not that they turn their backs totally to customers or anything like that, but just the fact that it's a consumer direct company, you have a bike that's a little bit older, I think you just run into issues. What have you guys seen as far as just the market for these bikes? We see plenty of them, without a doubt. But do you think the popularity of Canyon is fading, or do you think it's about the same?
I think they felt super popular because people that couldn't get XYZ brand could get them. You know, like if you go back to the scary times, you know, the big C, then, you know, you couldn't get a Trek, you couldn't get a Specialized, you couldn't get a Giant. So people looked at Canyon before they looked at used. That's my opinion. And I think that those riders have either replaced those with, you know, a Trek of their choice or whatever now, or they're just riding that bike because they ride it, you know, once a month, twice a month when the weather's really good. That's kind of my theory. I think that the problems that you see is like, you know, Andrea has that old joke, beware of the third owner Hellcat, like beware of the third owner Canyon. Like it's going to have some jank on it. Like,
I mean, I think you should beware of the third owner bike in general.
Not always. I mean, if it's just a fucking hardtail, that doesn't matter, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, we had to make up some cable holder bullshit with a bunch of zip ties for a Canyon because the little proprietary, oh, you clip this into your lower main pivot bolt and this keeps your shift cable from rubbing on your chainring. Well, cool, that part broke and it's unobtainium. So
I think if they had
with a bunch of zip ties,
I think if they had a modern era Specialized design ethos, that they would be even more successful than they are now. They did too much jank shit, in my opinion. Sometimes you got to push the limits, right? sometimes you got to push the limits and do BB-30, which then, you know, begets other cool stuff. And it might, you know, BB-30, obviously not good, but the idea of a bigger spindle is good. And they just had to tweak it and you end up with Dub, right? So pushing the limits is good, but you got to do it in moderation. And yeah, every little pinch bolt and cover and pluggy thingy and all the weird shit they have and, you know, handlebars that have like a whatever adjustable handlebar arrow thingies that creak and fall apart and all that kind of stuff. If they just didn't do any of that garbage, man, I just think they could be even more successful than they are now, in my opinion.
And you brought up Specialized, and I've now seen, as little as I work in the bike shop 2 days a week, I've seen enough shit in the low-end Specialized bikes that I never want a fucking Specialized. I don't know. I might change my mind after I ride one, and I'm like, never mind. Like, this one's actually good. Like,
well, what are you talking about? Like a $500 rock hopper or something? Or like what's the issue?
Like,
well, it's
the most recent one.
There's some brake issues on a Diverge E.
So that's the latest one. But I've replaced what they've spec'd on their low-end bikes. I've replaced 3 calipers that were leaking. I know they were a TRP product, but Specialized picked that shit out.
Right. I'm going to interject, though. At least when you want to put a new brake on, it just fucking bolts on.
Yeah, I don't disagree that some
unless
of their lower-end spec choices are bad.
Unless it's the most recent one, where when you put this flat-mount brake on the frame, you can't adjust the brake because it doesn't have enough hole in the frame to get the brake centered on the rotor. Like, you can move it as far as you want to one side, and it's still going to rub the rotor.
Oh, wait, that's not a Diverge, that's a Cirrus.
Yeah, whatever. It's one of the lower-end Specialized bikes. And, like, I don't know. I feel like they're low-end bikes. Like, they spend so little on specking and...
Well, for what it's worth, and I'm not just defending Specialized, but I haven't tried a different wheel in that bike yet.
No, you're not wrong, though. I mean, I've run into those same issues on... I think they do, yeah, some of their lower-end spec stuff, either bad choice. We've definitely had plenty of rip rocks and stuff, some of the more modern ones with nice hydro brakes, and they just, you know, have Pro Max problems or whatever. So, yeah, they're guilty of that, I think, a little bit. But I think at the core, you're not going to have weird fiddly parts on, like, a frame that cause you issues on a modern Specialized. That's pretty rare these days, which is a good thing, in my opinion.
Like, the days of the Venge headset for rim brake behind us.
Yeah, all that shit, thankfully, is gone. But I feel like Canyon is in a little bit of the mechanical Venge brake phase. And maybe they're getting out of that.
Hold on. I want to make an analogy to countries. So first world countries have a big problem with third world countries doing what first world countries did, evolving from third world to first world. Like, case in point, you know, people freak out because I'm geographically and globally ignorant, but, you know, like, for argument's sake, the EU is losing their mind because Zimbabwe wants to burn coal or whatever. And it's like, well, dude, you burned coal when you were at this stage in becoming a country. And I think what Canyon is doing is...
They're all burning coal.
All their kook shit is just consolidated, right? Yeah, so they're still in that burning coal phase. And, you know, maybe it'll get behind us. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe.
But I did install a dropper post on an integrated seat post bike or integrated headset bike this week.
It wasn't that bad.
It wasn't that bad, but it was harder than it should have been. So,
yeah. Again, you know, if I was Supreme Leader, I would not allow any cables to ever go through a headset bearing. That would be punishable by hard labor. Sorry.
Can, when you become Supreme Leader, can I be not so Supreme Leader, you know, like VP status? And while you're getting all of that sorted out, I'll make it where it is illegal for a manufacturer to use a tortilla bag or a cheese bag or something like that. Either the zipper in it needs to actually work, or you just don't include it. But we can't waste that little bit of plastic making people think they're going to get a zipper, and then you spend like 7 minutes trying to get it to zip correctly before you roll it up and put a chip clip on
it. No, that's good. So. I like where your head is. I think we should probably have an episode called Kenny is supreme leader, and I can go through my whole agenda. It's wild. Like, I got this whole thing laid out. I've been working on it for...
You have it, like, written down?
Oh, yeah. I've got it. I've had it going for 10-plus years. I got all kinds of stuff, from prison reform to zippers that don't work. Costco. And, like, Costco is on it, man. They got great buyers. They got great stuff. They sell rice bags, you know, that I buy all the time. I go through 20 pounds of rice a week or so, and... They have fucking zippers on those burlap sacks, and you can't use them. Funny. Like, what the hell?
Like the cheese bag from Safeway. Like, the first time you open it,
yeah, I don't know that
zipper,
one, but
yoinks off the plastic, and so you just have like an open bag.
Yeah.
Oh, and I'm gonna come out with one more, which is, so in our vehicles we have turn signals, right? This is our communication path to our fellow drivers that we are turning left or turning right. However, those are only fully effective at T intersections or when departing from a roadway. What I think every car needs is, we have this really handy dandy thing on generally the left side where you push it down and it turns on your left indicator. You push it up and it turns on your right indicator. I think there should be a little button in the end, and when you push it, it gives a forward indicator that times out after like 10 or 15 seconds. That way, when I pull up to a four-way stop, I can indicate that I'm moving forward. I'm not just a dickhead that might turn without my turn signal on.
I mean, if you're a dickhead who's going to turn without your turn signal on, you're also a dickhead.
Oh, I mean, that's the thing. It's no problem.
Wouldn't indicate forward.
Yeah, at four-way stops, I just go. And then if one of these people turns out in front of me after they were also not there in front of me, I just try to run into them. And then usually they back off. It's easy. Also, if you want to know one of the other little points on my supreme leader list, if you operate a motor vehicle, you're required to wear a shock collar. And if more than one driver, as in two plus drivers, hit their button on you, you get fucking shocked. It's super easy.
I just go down the road just squeezing it on every single person.
I thought it was going to be the one where you said everyone learns to drive in a 400 horsepower vehicle with no safety restraints, no ABS, no traction control, and a giant spike coming out of the center of the steering
wheel. Well, I mean, not quite that extent. But yeah, everyone's going to be required to do that. You got to like complete Gymkhana shit to be able to operate a motor vehicle. Like, if you can't do a J-turn, then you can't fucking operate a vehicle. Sorry, you can fucking walk or ride a bike. So anyway, we can go into that tirade. It's a great one. I got so many good things. I can definitely change the world.
So any listeners that want to hear a full episode of Kenny, what Kenny would do as supreme leader, just, you know, let us know. Fill out our web contact form on jraeshow.com or email info@jraeshow.com. And actually, I think you have to email info@justridingalongshow.com.
But I'm warning, like, it's going to be unhinged. So I just want people to be prepared. People will probably get feelings hurt, but it's not really unlike our normal show.
All right. Is that all of our new shit?
One more.
All right.
O-Chain is now owned by SRAM.
Oh. You want to remind the listeners what O-Chain is?
The kickback damping chainring system thingamajig fucker. I don't know.
So is it already built on an 8-bolt interface? Or is SRAM going to make it an 8-bolt interface?
It is. I mean, they've been offering 8-bolt, but also they offer 3-bolt. They offer them for a lot of stuff.
Okay. Well, cool.
Oh, yeah. If you go to their website, like, one of the first pictures is an 8-bolt spider, and then you keep scrolling and it's two different SRAM cranks with O-chains on them.
That's not SRAM, though.
The middle one?
Yeah.
I meant two cranks with, yeah.
Ooh, I got an idea. Who do you think, this is going to be a fun one, who do you think SRAM should buy next?
Because
I have one. You'll probably have some better ones, and I'll probably think of a better one later, but I have one in my brain right now.
What is it?
Okay, Kenny goes first. I'll come up with one better.
You think about
it. Or I have my own that's a slightly different one.
I think SRAM should buy Kashima, the whole company.
All right.
Just so they can fuck with people. A, they can make Kashima stuff, and like lots of people use Kashima stuff, and they can make the money on that. But B, they could just fuck with Fox. Like, just purely fuck with Fox and let them not do that anymore. I just think that would be funny. That's all. Not that I have anything against Fox. I just think it would be funny. That's all.
It would just entertain you.
It would entertain me.
That's all that matters.
Okay.
Matt, what's yours?
I would love, and I've talked to people and I understand the why, but what I'm asking for won't happen. But I would love... SRAM has a little bit of a branding problem right now within their Zip and Truvac family of companies.
100% because, agree.
And what I would love to see is Truvative just gone.
100%.
Truvative needs to go.
They need to sell that to some Chinese company for like a couple million dollars and just say, fuck it. Let them go nuts with it. And then like go and then just like go buy a bunch of Doritos or something, whatever they want to do with that money.
Well, I don't think that, but Zip has the coolest new road handlebars, right? Oh, Zip's a road company. Zip's a road company. Okay. Well, they made 3-0 motos and they made the high top wheel. Okay. So I want to deck out my new bike and it is a Arc 8, right? I'm just making something up. So I buy an Arc 8 frame and I buy a Sid with flight attendant and I get high tops and I get transmission and I want to build this up with a rigid seat post. So I buy a Zip seat post. And then what fucking bar and stem do I buy? I don't want to buy an Envy bar to put on my super sweet new bike that has SRAM Zip everything, but the Truvative stuff is just in the past. And I understand that Zip is a wheel company that happens to make road parts like bars and stuff, but I would love to have a really cool Zip flat bar for mountain biking. I'd love to see a Zip alloy stem for mountain biking. And I just think that we should embrace that as an industry, or they should embrace that. And it would be really cool to have that at our disposal because, you know, I've nothing against Envy, but I would just love some more options. And I think it would make their brand, you know, because then you could buy a frame, grips, tires, saddle, and you could have a totally decked out anything, right? But I just think that that's something that's just sort of coasting along, and I wouldn't care if the mountain stuff was Zip powered by Truvative for a while. Yee. You know, like if they wanted to phase that out.
Can I say something really mean?
I mean, you're going to anyway, so sure.
You are correct. I'm just trying to pad it a little bit, right? And here's the thing. There's people, I'm telling you this is mean. So it's just, I'm just going to say it. And there's people behind this brand that care about it and it's their baby. Does anyone give a fuck about Zip or the name? Because I'm going to argue no.
I think with road stuff, yes.
But do they? 15 years ago, they did. But does anyone give a fuck about Zip right now? Who goes out and buys Zip wheels? Like three people.
Well, okay. I'm going to give you another problem, which is if you go back in time 10 years, 15 years, when you got your nice Trek, it had some shitty fairing Bond Trigger wheel on it that wanted to explode when you just looked at it, right?
And it rattled.
Yeah, it was terrible.
Dude, I'm not denying. Like in the 2010 to 2015, maybe, I think Zip had carried weight. Like it was a brand that people liked and cared about, but it was also before, you know, Envy really, really took off hard and all that kind of stuff. I just think they have become irrelevant. And I think that they should sell both the Zip name and the Truvative name for Doritos or whatever they want to buy. And then they can put that money into doing something else. And I think that the name just SRAM carries way more weight than it ever has. And just brand it SRAM. That's my opinion.
SRAM 3-0 moto wheels.
Yeah, or like, you know, SRAM Pro, or I don't know, come up with some little thing, but just have it be SRAM. Let people know that it is SRAM because it is SRAM. I think that the brand is good enough now that there's nothing wrong with calling some $3,750 wheel set the SRAM wheel set.
Well, but to play devil's advocate here, do people really give a fuck about Envy's anymore?
I mean, I think it's been tough.
Not as much as they used to, but people still do, for sure.
But I think that goes into my argument of, like, you know, now when you get a Trek, it has really nice Bontrager wheels on them. Like, their wheels have gotten pretty good.
Bontrager has stuck with it, and Bontrager has good carbon wheels, and also at really good price points, by the way. If you wanted to buy an aftermarket nice wheel set, modern Bontrager stuff is great.
But the modern Roval stuff is better.
Ooh, I don't disagree with that. I'm just saying that the Bontrager stuff is good.
That's my next problem for Zip is used to your Roval wheels sucked and they don't suck anymore.
I think it's just becoming irrelevant because not many people are buying aftermarket bougie wheels anymore unless they're
that was going to be my point is that
people just don't need it because the
companies are speccing nice wheels, bars, you know, like the stuff that used to be popular and aftermarket for you to buy Envy or Zip. Like, people get that stuff on their $10,000 bike. It's already there.
Exactly.
You don't have to buy a $1,000 bike and then spend $3,000 on a set of wheels. You buy a $10,000 bike and it's got every fucking part that you ever wanted on it.
Who's like, who buys a stump jumper or something and then is Googling around like, I got $200 burning a hole in my pocket. I'm going to buy a Truvative bar. Nobody. Nobody has ever said that or done that. So...
No, they buy a one-up bar.
I think they need to get rid of both those brands. Just get rid of them, divest them, get the money out of them, and take all those resources and all that money and put it back into SRAM. That's my opinion.
Or Doritos or chicken nuggets.
Yeah. Buy a bag of Doritos for every employee, and then you're still going to have millions of dollars left over. And you can build cool shit. Maybe they can build a pedal. So that's my vote.
I mean, they bought time.
Well, quit buying stupid brands. They should have sold time.
They need
time.
To buy Shimano XTR pedals. Yeah,
they should have sold time, lit that thing on fire. That's terrible. Why? Like, bleh. I got lots of questions. So anyway, again, this is me being a dick / supreme leader. I'm just saying what I think from my side, which is they just need to sell Zip, sell Truvative, get out of it.
Well, Kenny, you don't get your supreme leader show until the listeners say that they want to hear it.
All right.
And we have one listener question. Do you guys want to get into that?
I also want to make sure that it's perfectly clear that what we're talking about here is me being an actual dictator.
Okay.
But that's it.
I think that was established a while ago.
I know. I just want to make sure that was really clear. Like, I don't want to mince words here. Like, I'm going to be a dictator and be fairly corrupt.
Fairly. I mean, that's like any world leader now, but I've discussed that on previous episodes.
Well, I'll tell people what I'm doing and why I'm doing it. Like, there'll be transparency to the corruption. Is there such a thing as that?
I mean, kind of, yeah.
All right, we should move forward.
All right, so we have one listener question. This is from Jim, a.k.a. Jim the Fucked Up Trike Guy. It says, what do you make of the new PERS drivetrain system? And that is capital P-E-R-S. No chain, no gears. How does it work and how do I get it? So I had to Google this and I looked through... a couple of different articles and a couple of different things. This is, so on this company, it's CIXI. I don't know if you're supposed to say that as a word or just use the, use the acronym or what, but I was just looking at what it is and it looks like it's an electric motor. It doesn't shift. And somehow the part that you're pedaling, which looks like, it looks like an e-bike where you have like a big chunky bottom bracket area, but it also has a motor on the rear wheel.
Well, we've talked about this before years ago, and it's just two motors. One's a generator, one's a motor. It's electrically coupled.
Okay. And then it also looks like they have developed a mountain bike that is two-wheel drive. So you have a front motor and a rear motor. And pedaling regenerates the battery as well as braking. And yeah, I mean, it really looks like it's just an electric motorcycle that you just operate with your feet instead of a throttle.
Yeah, to me, it makes, if you were going to do this with no batteries, this is never going to work. It would be, the losses would be, even if you made it baller, would probably be in the 5%. More than likely, it'd be in the 10% ballpark, which would just be unacceptable. So that wouldn't work. And also it would be so soft and so laggy with you putting in power versus it doing stuff. And it would also never, it would be basically physically impossible for it to do anything at super low cadences. So you could never get like, it would be way too soft. It would be like pedaling into a sponge constantly. You could never like wheelie from a dig, for example. It would be physically impossible. No way. But yeah, if you have a battery and the pedals are there basically just to be torque sensors and technically they would be a generator and put in a teeny tiny bit of power into the batteries. But really, it's more of a, hey, how fast are you pedaling? And then we can put power into it. And I guess what they're getting at is you can very easily make a two-wheel drive bike with no linkages to anything. But you can do that today. You can do it right now today with just an e-bike. You can set up an e-bike and just not have a fucking chain. And essentially, instead of having cranks, it's just a throttle. And you can do it today. So replace throttle with cranks and you can have that. I mean, I get where they're getting at, but my question would be like, why? I guess so they can get around the legislation essentially that it's a bicycle because it has cranks on it. But really at the end of the day, yeah, it's just an electric vehicle.
Yeah. That's kind of what I thought, because they're really, I don't know. Like, they're very, they don't really say how it, they're very like 10,000 foot flyover in how it works. They just say that it's very awesome. And I just like it. I can see there are some situations where having a two-wheel drive mountain bike might make sense. And they go on in this article on their website about how you can pedal up a 24% grade, where with a standard e-bike, you can only pedal up a 15% grade. That I don't know where they
false,
got those numbers.
False on all fronts. Yeah, that's just,
well,
it's just,
like, well, Kenny, hold on to interject there. I think what they're saying there is because you're not directly coupled to the rear wheel. I'm trying to think of how this would work. Essentially, it can give you gearing so low that you can be in a cadence range that a normal e-bike wouldn't allow power. Because I ran into that on a customer with a Creo. He did a big ride, and big is in terms of like a big climb with other people. And because his gearing wasn't easier, if he rode with them, he was under the cadence that the Creo wanted to make power. So he had to go hard enough to get up on top of it and keep going. So I'm not going to call total bullshit. I think it's just some shenanigans in terms of...
Let me be clear, too. Like, this technology can work 100%. This is not... It's not actually that groundbreaking at all. It's just a hub motor in the rear. It's a hub motor in the front with a fucking battery and a controller like exists today. And then the crank is just a torque sensor and a generator.
Yeah, and they say they have some stuff in here about how it uses an algorithm to figure out how much power to put out and what cadence the rider wants to maintain at that power. And I don't know. I mean, front wheel drive, I understand that the hub motor in the front, and this, they make other, like I said, they make other products that are not a two wheel drive mountain bike. They have a lot of like cargo bikes and different, much more like real world functional, like something you could use every day in a bike friendly city, like that type of bikes. You know, they make a lot of that. And I think that their system is very relevant for that. But I think for actual mountain biking, I understand the hub motor in the front would add some weight and give you traction. But having power put down to the wheel that you need to steer just seems like a bad idea.
You would never want to do it. They've tried it in the motocross world. They've actually made some really, really cool stuff if you want to go down that rabbit hole. They made basically a hydrostatic drive for a moto, and it didn't add a ton of weight, and they made it fairly reliable, and it was cool in a few situations. But no matter what you do, especially on a mountain bike where you're going to want to have suspension, the amount of unsprung weight you're going to have in a friggin' hub motor and all the weird ass gyroscopic effects and all the other stuff you're going to get from that.
Yeah.
I just, there's so few situations where you run out of physical traction on a regular mountain bike climbing up something. And if you're in that situation, you're probably going to flip over backwards anyway. So like having front wheel drive at that point is pretty silly. Outside of some crazy high horsepower situation in the real world, there's just no, there's just no reason to have it outside of really, really niche stuff and just the craziest, most techie stuff out there in the world. I just don't see a point to it. And it would just be worse everywhere else, because then you'd have to ride this bike with a friggin' hub motor on the front of it. And now you're descending and it's going to ride like dog ass.
Yeah. I mean, I can definitely, yeah, for the stuff that they have that's cargo bike, like cargo and like real world just transportation, I think that their system is just another option for people that want to ditch a car, and it looks good. But yeah, like the mountain bike thing, I think it's a stretch. But yes, Jim, the way it works is like Kenny said, you have basically your pedals are your controller, and your, you know, then you just have like a hub driven e-bike motor.
Yeah. Your pedals are your throttle essentially. And I think we've all finally learned this so far, outside of even on motos, it's such a small thing and they're a lot heavier. And so until you get up into the car realm, regen braking on a bicycle nets you so little. It's just
silly.
Because
your total system weight is so low.
Yeah, it's you're talking about 1%, and then you have to add all that complexity. Granted, there's, depending on the hub motors you use and all that, you don't have to do a whole lot to do it. And it's why in the mountain bike world, for a lot of reasons, we've just settled on mid drives, because you can't get regen on mid drives, but it turns out, who gives a fuck? It just doesn't matter. Even on my e-moto,
you
Go ahead.
Well, you can't get regen on mid drives with multi-speed.
Yeah, I guess you could with some type of belt system that's perfectly tensioned and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, I guess you could. But with a traditional chain derailleur setup, yeah, that does not work. But even on my moto, where I can set up ridiculous amounts of regen, like enough regen that it will throw you over the front of the motorcycle. And even with that setting, doing ridiculously mountainous stuff, I can get like down a humongous downhill. It's a net zero. As in, like, it's not actually regening anything into the battery. It is just using nothing for me to go at a reasonable speed, essentially.
All right. Well.
All right. Do we want to read patrons and wrap it up?
Sure.
Yeah, I'm pretty, you could say I need to regen.
Oh, God. All right. So, all of our patrons who donate $10 a month or more, we read their names, whatever they put in here on Patreon, on air. So at $10 a month, we've got the patron known as Aaron _ Leland, AJ. Oh, God, do we have... Hold on. I feel like...
Yeah, you didn't do something right, because Leland and AJ shouldn't touch.
Yeah. Hold on, I fucked something up. I'm just going to have to edit.
No, just run it. Run the fuck ups.
I hate running the fuck ups. All right, sorry. So, restarting our patrons at $10 a month, Zozo, Tom's P, Tom Pickle, Timothy, the patron known as Aaron _, Ty, Tennessee Zach, Taylor Zwift, Taper Bore Pro, Skunk in Your Trap, Samuel, Ryan, Ride Time Extended, Potatoes, Noah, My Pal Dal, MTB Shenanigans,
Mike Jones,
Leland, Josh, Jim the Fucked Up Trike Guy, JC, Jared, Jake D, Holden, Two Dicks, Green Giant, Gordon, Frank the Tank, Fart Noises, Eric, Chunk Norris, Captain Fickle, Cam Irish One, Bill, Bearded Bag O' Dicks, Barrel of Dicks, Angry JRA Forever, AJ, Aaron, A Very Prominent Stud Horse, _, at $11.11 per month, people who ride inverted forks were just one bad haircut away from becoming CrossFit coaches. Patamelon Disco at $14, Dean at $16.50, and at $20 a month, we've got Scott, Poop Wrench, Joe, I Want a Mustache Ride from Burt Reynolds, Brian at $26.06 per month, Kenny's Own Private Utah, Harley at 30, Troy at 31, and Six Pack Outdoors, we're the reason your GoPro footage is now evidence, at Fitty. All right, that's it. You guys ready?
Shut it down.
Shut it down.
All right, everyone. Thank you all for listening, and good night.
Thanks for tuning in to the Just Riding Along show.
There's some shit coming out of your brake pads.